There's a stamp in my passport right between Kenya and Croatia. It says in simple blue block letters, Sealand. That's the sound of the principality's one passport stamp. Sealand issues postal stamps, coins, and passports. It has citizens, an economy, a monarchy, and a location. 51.53 degrees north, 01.28 degrees east, 7 miles off the southeast coast of the United Kingdom. Prince Michael of Sealand shows us his domain, a short stretch of steel on two cement pillars.
Is this the east coast or west coast?
Well, it's pretty much a south coast one now. Uh-huh. And then we'll walk down to the east coast.
Okay.
Okay.
Here goes.
So here we have the west coast, right? Uh-huh. What about the upper regions, eh? The high ground.
Right, yeah. Oh, that's right above
the
us.
The helipad, yeah.
Helipad, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Do you want to go up there?
Could we go up here? Yeah, please. Sure. Thank you.
The high ground of Sealand is up a flight of stairs that rise to a yellow and green helipad 70 feet above the churning waters of the North Sea.
And it says Sealand here, doesn't it?
It certainly does. And we're actually working on putting an electric fence up for security reasons across the top. Seems a reasonable idea.
As we'll see, you need the prince to get you aboard. Now, what makes a platform 120 feet long, 50 feet wide, rising on two chunky concrete towers, a nation? Prince Michael's parents, Roy and Joan Bates, declared their 6,000-square-foot realm a sovereign principality in 1967. But the birth of this nation began, as so many do, in war. Great Britain built four offshore forts in 1942 to guard the Thames estuary leading into London. Improbable contraptions standing like stone and steel storks in the North Sea. The fort that's now Sealand was Fort Rough's Tower, 7 miles north of the port at Harwich. 200 men were bunkered down in the fort's concrete pillars, along with food and bullets, while cannon blazed on top. The forts helped save Britain, but historian Frank Turner says that Britain made a strategic error at war's end by not tearing down the platforms.
As they were outside territorial waters, they abandoned them. Mm-hmm. But they overlooked the law of the sea, which says that if you put an obstacle there, you're duty-bound to remove it, and they just ignored that.
The forts were forgotten war relics until the 1960s. Roy Bates raised a radio antenna atop one of the forts when the BBC was Britain's only legal broadcaster to beam what was called pirate radio.
We're going to turn now on the swing session program this afternoon to Duke Ellington and his famous orchestra, a number here which was recorded in April of 1953. It's called Prelude to a Kiss.
Bates relocated his transmitter to Rough's Tower in 1967 because it was beyond what was then Britain's 3-mile territorial limits. But when Britain legalized private radio, Roy Bates was left with the same quandary as the British government. What do you do with a couple of old two-legged forts riding the swells of the North Sea? Britain didn't want to spend the money to tear them down. Roy Bates hoped he could make money by declaring a nation. Lawyers advised him to install a sovereign. Principalities, apparently, are simpler to create than kingdoms. Grace Kelly was already presiding over Monaco, so Mr. and Mrs. Bates declared themselves the Prince and Princess of Sealand. Their faces adorned Sealand coins and stamps. They spent the best part of 30 years residing there, living amid rust, salt spray, schemes, and dreams. We spoke with them on their balcony, overlooking the mouth of the Thames.
Does anyone ever call you Majesty?
Occasionally, particularly when I'm abroad. But when they do that, we duck and dodge very, very carefully. We don't even use our sailing passports abroad now, because, which we used to, but wherever we went, it was, so we were more or less mobbed by the press and everything, and we don't look for any publicity.
Anyone ever refer to you as Your Royal Highness? Or?
Yes, a lot of people do. Don't forget, other people like to use your title, really. I mean, it's not us so much that use it, it's other people use it. They like to use it.
Roy Bates has been famous for most of his life. He was just shy of 18 when he enlisted in the British Army during World War II and became one of the Army's youngest majors. During the 1960s, Mr. Bates was considered a kind of Richard Branson character, a millionaire fishing fleet entrepreneur with brash ideas and a smashing blonde wife who remembers when they acquired their two-legged state.
We went to the local pub for a drink, which he liked to do in the evening, and we used to have a few friends join us. And he said, "There you are, darling, now you've got an island. What do you think of that?" And I said, "Well, I'd like my own flag and a few palm trees." And, you know, being a woman, I wasn't satisfied with just having a fortress. And we took it from there, really. He went home that night and studied a lot of law books and couldn't find any reason why we couldn't make an independent state out of it.
So I'm trying to understand if Sealand became invested as a nation, as a lark, as a commercial idea from the first, as a way to honor and celebrate your wife?
Yeah, it was a commercial idea, totally commercial. And we've had hundreds of people, propositions from all sorts, which we've turned almost all of them down, because we wouldn't do anything which was anti-British or unethical or whatever, you know. And most of these things which came to us were, I think, a little bit on the wrong side, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask, why would someone who palpably loves Britain, who has risked his life more than once for Britain and for Britain's survival, now want to do something which just rubs Britain the wrong way and Britain is convinced poses a threat?
I tell you what, I've asked myself that question many times and I'm damned if I know the answer. But it was a challenge, and I can't resist a challenge.
Roy and Joan Bates moved off of Sealand a year and a half ago. They're growing old, and it's a rough and rusty way to live. They're looking for a retirement home in Florida. They formed a business partnership, Havenco, a company that offers customers a place in which to locate their computer servers that's safe, secure, and sovereign, and a chore to reach. We pulled on rubber wetsuits to ride out to Sealand on a resupply mission, along with members of the royal family, three security employees, and several supermarket sacks of fresh food. Cold North Sea waves crashed against our boat and splashed our faces until we reached the platform, actually below it, with Prince Michael at the helm. The only way to actually get on the soil of Sealand, well, I guess these columns count as soil, is that is a wench that raises you 50, 60 feet up.
That's right. Well, that's because it's a fortress and it's a secure environment, right. So we don't make it easy for people to get on.
Yeah.
Anyway, if you care to move forward,
all right.
And we'll get you on the bosun's chair.
Keep my helmet off or on?
Keep it on in case you get a bang over the head.
Oh, Peter. Now the wench is taking it out. See you later.
Long like a bird.
The platform is guarded year-round. Alan Beale, Sealand's chief of security, stamps passports, totes a gun, and is on the lookout for invaders, terrorists, or the Royal Marines.
That wouldn't necessarily pose too much of a threat, because being 60 feet above them, it's not the easiest thing in the world to scale.
They'd be hard-pressed to get up here.
Yeah.
Right?
The way people train nowadays, yes, of course, people come aboard and take it over. There's no doubt about it. But the British government, I don't think, would do it. The British government wouldn't allow a foreign power to do it, and they certainly wouldn't want any terrorists out here.
Sealand is 7 miles off the coast of Britain, but surrounded by British territory. Havenco does not recognize British law, but it relies on British security to make the platform a safe investment. Ryan Lackey, the company's American-born chief technical officer, is one of Sealand's few full-time residents. He showed us the computer servers in Sealand's concrete legs, on which space can be bought for a $1,500 monthly fee. I mean, is the environment here? I mean, we're under the sea. It's a World War II construction. Is this exactly safe for sophisticated machinery?
It's watertight, and it's 12 to 24 inch thick concrete walls. And as far as internet links, we have redundant internet connections and to multiple countries, which most locations do not have. The alternative, of course, for most people is to put them in California, which is having some serious power problems right now.
Yeah.
And we have redundant power generation and not quite as dangerous.
But Havenco's principal selling point is Sealand's supposed sovereignty. The company will not accept subpoenas from any country to turn over data from the servers on Sealand. If a boat from the Royal Marines, Interpol, the World Court, or the U.S. Navy SEALs storms the platform with legal papers, Prince Michael says...
And we don't accept subpoenas. We guarantee if we come under physical attack and we can't cope with it, we'll destroy the hard drives as well.
That guarantee has not been tested. A couple of times, lower British courts have said that British laws do not apply on Sealand. The British government has not appealed. presumably because they don't want to lose a case that could seem to ratify Sealand's independence. But other powers have had designs. On a blustery afternoon in 1978, a helicopter tried to land on Sealand. Roy and Joan Bates had gone off to Austria for a meeting. It turned out to be a ruse to get them off of Sealand, leaving Prince Michael alone in his father's domain.
While he was away in Austria, this KLM helicopter turns up, and a guy came, I wouldn't let it land, and a guy came down on a winch wire who I recognised. He was a German tax consultant. He came down and talked to me, and he showed me a telex from my father, well, purportedly from my father, saying that we'd signed a contract and I should hand over to these people. To cut a long story short, I went into our living room, which at the time had just small portholes, no big double-glazed windows. And the door...
That's the room next door to us?
The room next door to us here. And the door got slammed, and there I was, locked in this steel room. The windows were too small to get out of. There was just no way out of the steel box.
Prince Michael spent 3 days locked in that box. His captors dumped him off on a fishing trawler bound for the Netherlands. We asked the Bates...
When your son was kidnapped for a couple of days and you didn't know his whereabouts, did you ever turn to your husband and say, look, we've had our little fun, but this is our son?
No way. No, it was just one of those, another thing you had to put up with in life. You know, you don't leave, adventure is not always easy, is it? Oh no, you didn't say give it up. It made you more determined to succeed in what you were doing.
They gathered up a security team, then phoned a friend who had flown helicopter stunts in James Bond films. The Sealander struck at dawn, Princes Roy and Michael themselves sliding down ropes to storm the platform.
Very, very close to come to a firefight. Mm-hmm. It was that close, you know. But then the situation was diffused.
Anybody shoot at them?
I did. And that diffused the situation. That was either kill or cure, go or don't go. And they decided to stick their hands up in the air. Up to that moment, you wouldn't have known how it was going to go.
Never before in the history of a country so small had so few owed so much to men so few. But what to do with the coup plotters? Prince Roy decided to put them on trial.
Were they represented by counsel?
No. We had... I elected one of my own men there to look after and represent them. I don't think he tried very hard, but... It was a pretty open-shut case, you know. They were there with weapons in their hands, and they'd taken the place, and we took it back off them. And they didn't refute it either.
Prince Roy released the hired muscle, but he saved a different fate for that German lawyer, whose name, by the way, was Putz.
Well, we did accuse him of treason, because he was a German lawyer who had worked for us. And because of his work for us, we had allowed him to have a Sealand passport, which means he owes allegiance to Sealand. And so he was charged with treason and sentenced.
Well, you know the traditional punishment for treason.
Yes. I did think of it. I mean, you know, it was a long war. I'd killed a lot of Germans in my time. Another one wouldn't have made much difference, I suppose. But I didn't want to kill anything else, really.
Herr Putz was imprisoned on Sealand for about 6 weeks before being released. Prince Michael has since consulted him for legal advice. Why let coups and imprisonment stand in the way of business? Now, we tried to find someone in the British government to speak about Sealand. The Foreign Office said that Sealand is not a foreign state. They would have nothing to say. The Home Office said they do not wish to be interviewed, but sent along a written statement that says, in part, the UK does not recognize Sealand as an independent state and is not aware that anyone else does. Prince Roy and Princess Joan reply.
There are a lot of places that don't recognize Monaco.
They didn't recognize China for years, did they? But it was still there, all their millions. But they're not going to give it to us on a plate and say yes, come straight out and say, yes, we recognize Sealand, this, that and the other. I mean, you know, they're going to be cautious, aren't they?
Historian Frank Turner says that Britain seems to be stuck by its own historic lawfulness and cannot legally defeat Roy Bates' claim for Sealand sovereignty.
All they're hoping is that he'll die and it'll go away. And the first thing they'll do, if the place is left unattended, they'll go in and blow it up.
Yeah. But his son Prince Michael seems...
Well, they've not counted on Michael, but Michael will carry it on.
But Jim Dempsey, Deputy Director of the Center for Democracy and Technology in Washington, D.C., says that any debate over Sealand sovereignty is a phony proposition.
I think that it's a bit of fantasy.
Mr. Dempsey says that any companies who keep data on Sealand could not practically refuse subpoenas.
And when the government comes to you with a subpoena mm-hmm. and says, give me your records, you cannot say, I gave them to my mother, or they're locked in a safe, or they're locked up on Sealand. The government will say, well, go get them from your mother, or go unlock the safe, or tell the people in Sealand to give them to us. And if you don't, then you're subject to contempt. You can be put in jail for sometimes years.
Sealand's utter lack of regulations, he says, should make companies worry about storing data there. Who would stop Havenco from selling or destroying the information on its servers? The Courts and Justice Department of Sealand? The royal family is more eager to talk about sovereignty than business. They won't say how much money they have made or lost on Sealand. They won't say who has server space there. They smile about reports that the exiled government of Tibet has to keep records safe from China. They frown about reports that adult porn sites and offshore gambling interests are also clients. Prince Roy implies that he has refused business from child pornographers and hate groups. He thinks they're bad folks who could provoke Britain into sending out a strike force, hang the legal complications. In the end, Mr. Bates is a loyal British subject who sees Sealand as a British adventure.
Well, I think it can give total independence, it can give total freedom of thought, and total freedom for free enterprise, which is what Britain built its empire on, free enterprise. And it hasn't got free enterprise now, it's being stultified. And the whole of Europe's going on the same track, and we're hoping that we can maybe make a loophole in that.
But it is impossible to tell how many customers may be doing business on Sealand. In fact, anxiety about business may be why the royal family let us on to their platform principality. It is one thing to admire their willingness to risk their futures on a bold and breezy venture. It's quite another to convince people to invest in it. There's more about Sealand, including pictures of the principality, on our website, npr.org.